Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and we're going to continue now with our discussion of the reemergence of German fascism, German Nazism, and German extreme nationalism. Often those three things taking place with a considerable arena of overlap, I guess one could say. We have been relying in past segments on information from the pamphlet Reunited Germany, the New Danger. That is put out by the editors of the Searchlight magazine in cooperation with Antifa Infoblatt, a German anti-fascist information service. This pamphlet is available from the Searchlight. That is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, its opposite number. Information for subscriptions and the address, etc., for Searchlight magazine, also the address to get Reunited Germany, the New Danger, all of that follows.
To subscribe to the Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax 011-4471-284-4410. That's the Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax at 011-4471-284-4410.
That again, the address, etc., for the Searchlight magazine, also the address to order Reunited Germany, the New Danger. Again, put out by the editors of the Searchlight magazine in cooperation with Antifa Infoblatt. We've been talking about the continuity between the old Wehrmacht under Adolf Hitler and the new German army, the Bundeswehr. Unfortunately, the denazification of Germany was largely a myth, although there are certainly many people and many institutions in Germany that are not Nazi. The alleged denazification that took place at the end of World War II never really took place. The anti-communist and anti-labor stance of Nazism made it very favorable to the leaders of the Western nations. They deemed it very useful in the Cold War, and so the denazification of Germany was never effected. The German army was no exception. There is an extraordinary degree of continuity between the old German military of Adolf Hitler and the new German military. The segments that we've dealt with so far from Reunited Germany, the New Danger, have dealt with the, quote, new, unquote, Bundeswehr. We're examining this at this time because with the international cooperation breaking down more rapidly than ever, with regard to the former Yugoslavia, German armed forces are now being committed to a support role, so far an air support role. This is the first combat mission German forces have engaged in since the end of World War II. It figures that the situation in the former Yugoslavia will worsen. As we looked at in our last installment, there is considerable evidence that the trouble there was deliberately precipitated by Germany. Certainly the blame for the war in the former Yugoslavia lies squarely with Germany's recognition of Croatian and Slovenian independence and the support that Germany has shown throughout the Cold War period for the Ustashi fascists that descended from the Nazi collaborationist state of, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia during World War II. We've dealt with that in numerous Radio Free America shows, including the miscellaneous archive show dealing with Nazis and fascists on George Bush's campaign, Radio Free America number 17, and Radio Free America program number 36, among others. What we're going to be looking at next, I guess one could say we're going to dolly back a little bit, if one thinks of a movie camera metaphor for the examination that we're undertaking right now. We've been examining the Bundeswehr, the new German military, and the frightening degree of continuity between the old and the new German military. This again because the German military figures to be assuming a much larger role in post-Cold War Europe. They figure to be assuming a larger role in the hot war in the former Yugoslavia. And as we shall see in the segments to come, in our examination of Reunited Germany, the New Danger, there is an alarming degree of continuity between German military, German political, and German economic policy. And there is a very frightening possibility of a shooting war in Europe, a much larger shooting war than the already distasteful conflict taking place in the former Yugoslavia. What we're going to look at next is German economic imperialism with regard to German policy toward Eastern Europe. In particular, we're going to take a look at German attempts to control strategic industries in former Eastern Europe, and in particular to control the flow of information in some of the former Warsaw Pact countries, this by way of affecting political control. We're going to turn again to Reunited Germany, the New Danger. The reference here, and we're going to overlap the text slightly with the last installment of text, the reference here is to a NATO meeting in 1974 that the recent NATO General Secretary Manfred Werner attended, and that is the reference here to 20 years later. Reading now from Reunited Germany, the New Danger. In July of 1994, 20 years later, the latter step was taken when, backed by 142 pages of tortuous legal argumentation, the Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe decided that German troops should be dispatched beyond NATO's frontiers and, subject to parliamentary approval, could take part in multinational operations. Behind all the official proposals and counterproposals on the future of Europe is a deep and unspoken fear of regenerated German militarism and dominance. As international affairs specialist James Rollo from the Institute of Strategic Studies in London has explained, quote, what we see, some among us with a shudder, is Germany taking the helm in Europe, unquote. And then the Searchlight goes on to comment, Germany already has the helm in Europe, and the big questions in the future will be the military ones. The French government hopes to contain Germany in the short term, at the same time as targeting its short-range Hades nuclear missiles on German cities through the European Corps and the WEU. Britain and the USA hold a different view. Pin Germany down through a continuing NATO presence and greater engagement in NATO affairs. Germany, meanwhile, cleverly plays both ends against the middle by claiming to stand for both. The Karlsruhe Court decision leaves much of that debate on the shelf. Germany is now a force to be reckoned with. Along with the constitutional decision comes a less reported one, giving German forces in the Adriatic authorization to shoot if necessary. Greeting the rulings, German Foreign Minister Klaus Kinkel declared, quote, the decision gives Germany freedom of action in foreign policy. The break that was holding us back is gone, unquote. Kinkel was only echoing the words of his government colleague, Defense Minister Volker Rühe, in his 1994 defense white paper, quote, the Bundeswehr is an instrument of foreign policy, unquote. Commenting on the Karlsruhe judgment, the U.S. news magazine Newsweek said in its July 25, 1944 edition, quote, indeed, the full weight of the decision won't be felt for at least 10 to 15 years. Then, politicians too young to remember the war will dominate the Bundestag and issues of war and peace will be theirs to debate. Again, our examination of the continuity between the old and the new German military takes place in the context of a shift in German policy towards military matters. Now the Bundeswehr is being transformed into an army of aggression. And indeed, German Defense Minister Volker Rühe, as indicated here, has already indicated that the Bundeswehr is an instrument of foreign policy. Note, too, that as we speak on the evening of July 16th, of 1995, this past week, French commandos stormed the Rainbow Warrior II. That's a ship that is owned by the Greenpeace organization. They have been protesting the French resumption of nuclear testing in the South Pacific without endorsing what the French did to the Greenpeace ship. I do think I think it's worth noting that the French resumption of testing takes place in the context of the growing German dominance over Europe, and indeed, as we shall see, German economic and political policy are already pointing in such a direction as to leave the options open for military action if German political and economic policies aimed at dominating not only all of Europe, but eventually all of the world do not succeed, then German military policy will, in all likelihood, fill the breach. Hence, the emphasis on the continuity between the old and the new German military and the revamping of the Bundeswehr into an army of aggression. And again, note that, as indicated here, reading again, At the same, the French government hopes to, the French government hopes to contain Germany in the short term, at the same time as targeting its short-range Hades nuclear missiles on German cities through the European Corps and the WEU. So note that as the French are resuming nuclear testing, they are targeting their short-range Hades nuclear missiles on German cities, something we simply have not been told about here in the United States. What we're going to examine next is German economic policy toward Eastern Europe, and as we shall see, that economic policy would be accurately described as one aimed at promoting political control of Eastern Europe. We'll go into this at greater length in just a few minutes. Returning again to reunited Germany, the new danger, as we swing now from an examination of the German military, the quote, new, unquote, German military, to German economic policy towards Eastern Europe. And by the way, I recommend for people that would like to supplement the information they're hearing in these broadcasts, contact Archives on Audio at 415-346-1840, full address to be given at the end of this segment, for some of the Wilhelm Stauffer interviews, interviews with an international political consultant. These interviews conducted in 1993 and 1994, and as veteran listeners will realize, those interviews and this information in reunited Germany dovetail, unfortunately, to a large extent. Returning to reunited Germany, the new danger of German economic policy towards Eastern Europe, the authors or the writers say, the reality now is much more dangerous because in a highly directed way, Germany has already embarked on an attempt to conquer Eastern Europe, but in a manner, quote, befitting, unquote, the circumstances of the final years of the 20th century. The image of a rich Germany, whose banks and industries pour billions of marks into the Eastern European countries to buy up factory after factory, to turn the region into a low-wages colony, and at the same time, to put these countries on the road of, quote, capitalist development, unquote, is false. German direct investment in the Eastern European countries is, contrary to widespread belief, quite small, but selective. Precise figures for the amount of foreign investment in Eastern Europe are difficult to obtain, and the figures vary from publication to publication, but we can form a picture of the development. The authors go on to point out here, and we'll go into this in detail, that the countries of Eastern Europe simply do not have economies, at this stage of the game anyway, which could support a viable modern market economy. The German economic policy towards the newly liberated countries of Eastern Europe is rather one of controlling those countries, of affecting political control by controlling certain key strategic industries as well as communications industries. However, Germany is not investing in Eastern Europe in order to develop a modern market economy for reasons that we will examine in detail right now. Returning to reunited Germany, the new danger. Between 1990 and 1994, a maximum of $23 billion U.S. dollars was invested in Eastern Europe, not including the former Soviet Union, from abroad. From this amount, about 5 billion Deutschmarks, 15%, originated from Germany. When one considers that the German electronics and engineering giant Siemens alone possesses about 20 billion Deutschmarks in cash at any one time, the sums invested in Eastern Europe are modest, to say the least. Indeed, after only a few years of a supposedly free market economy in the former socialist bloc countries, German investment has actually begun to fall. Times have changed since 1989, when the frontiers were opening and German firms were quick to seize their new investment opportunities and to expand them. In former Czechoslovakia, for example, German investments accounted for 70% of all foreign investment in 1991. Also in former Czechoslovakia, for the four financial years 1989 to 1992 inclusive, German investments averaged 39.9% of all foreign investments, followed by the USA with 21.1% and France with 14.6%. From 1992, however, German investment has been tangibly reduced. In the first quarter of 1993, German investment in the Czech Republic amounting to 4.7% fell behind that of the USA at 70.3% and France at 5.7%. Meanwhile, Czechoslovakia has split into two states. By 1994, there were no further significant transfers of capital from Germany. On the contrary, promised investments were even canceled. In October of 1994, this breach of promise led to a strike by workers in the Škoda vehicles factory in Mladá Boleslav, in which Volkswagen, a major shareholder, was accused of treachery and having, quote, a master race mentality, unquote. By the way, German pressure via the Volkswagen firm and Škoda on the Czech Republic was discussed in our interviews with Wilhelm Stauffer, available from archives on audio. Continuing with Reunited Germany, the New Danger. In other countries in Eastern Europe, the development has been similar. In Hungary, the USA has invested more than Germany. In Romania, Germany ranks fourth in foreign investors behind Italy, the USA, and the Netherlands. In Poland, the main investor is not Germany, but Italy. The East European Bank has bitterly complained about the diminished readiness of German banks to take part in projects in the former East Bloc states. At the moment, 41 major finance projects are backed by U.S. financial institutions, 29 by France, but only 16 by German banks. Is East European fear of gross Deutschland therefore irrational? Is Europe's fear of a Germany which, from, quote, Central Europe, unquote, outwards, can subdue the continent also misplaced in the light of these figures and developments? Quite the opposite. And by the way, what we're going to get into next is an analysis of German, in effect, economic warfare being waged against some of the countries of the former Eastern Europe. We're going to set this in historical perspective in just a couple of minutes. Continuing with Reunited Germany, the New Danger. Resuming with the last couple of sentences, is Europe's fear of a Germany which, from Central Europe outwards, can subdue the continent also misplaced in the light of these figures and developments? Quite the opposite. We cannot regard these developments as grounds for comfort because they are not new historically. The relative share of German capital in Czechoslovakia between 1929 and the 1938 Munich Agreement was similarly small until the occupation of Czechoslovakia by Hitler's hordes raised it again dramatically. The reason why the aggressive policies of a newly enlarged Germany constitute a threat to peace is exactly the same reason for the visible inability of the developed industrial nations to create a free enterprise economy on the territory of the former socialist states, capable of bringing a sufficient return on their investments. Shrinking markets for massive surpluses of products. Now again, I'm going to reread this last sentence because this, states the problems with regard to economically developing Eastern Europe in order to develop into a modern market economy, something Germany is not doing. Again, the reason why the aggressive policies of a newly enlarged Germany constitute a threat to peace is exactly the same reason for the visible inability of the developed industrial nations to create a free enterprise economy on the territory of the former socialist states, capable of bringing a sufficient return on their investments. Shrinking markets for massive surpluses of products. In a world where the annual turnover of General Motors is bigger than the gross national product of Norway, the world's big industrial concerns have invested such great amounts of productive capital internationally that their investments are frequently no longer profitable. The president of BASF, a successor company to the Nazi war criminal chemicals complex IG Farben, said recently that the growth of consumption on a world scale is so small that BASF now has to think more in terms of major rationalization and cutbacks than expansion. Because of that tendency, East Europe is far more important as a market for dumping products than as a region to build new factories and productive capacity. The chief of Siemens in the Czech Republic expressed the same sentiments to the Prager Zeitung. And more about the difficulties that Eastern Europe would present as a potential modern market economy. The alleged low-wage advantage of the Eastern European countries means at the same time, however, lower purchasing power. We should not forget that between 1989 and 1993, these countries lost 70% of their own economic strength. In foreign trade, their combined share of the whole European market is about the same as Sweden's. In Russia, every fourth citizen is officially poor as a result. So why should Germany invest in countries where so little comes back in the investment? Beginning again, so why should Germany invest in countries where so little comes back on the investment? There is no base in these countries to install a flourishing free market economy. Between 60 and 70% of all joint ventures hover on the edge of failure and bankruptcy already. And then the Searchlight, Reunited Germany, the New Danger, goes on to analyze German policy towards the former East Germany, where any industry that could not be expanded and developed was wiped out, with Germany's economic policy towards the former Soviet bloc countries of Eastern Europe. And again, note that the loss of economic strength in those countries after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the coming down of the Berlin Wall makes those countries a poor bet for developing into a modern market economy in the immediate future. As we shall see, that is not what Germany is in all probability planning on doing. It certainly isn't what their policy as of the present moment is aimed at. Of Germany's policy towards the former East Germany, Reunited Germany, the New Danger says, "The German economy itself is in the kind of difficult situation which always made Germany dangerous. What Eastern Europe can expect from any intervention by German banks and firms has already been illustrated by the Federal Republic's takeover of former East Germany. This takeover shows that what they cannot expand, they destroy. The big West German firms have wiped out approximately 80% of the East German economy. They have not undercut it by fair competition, as is generally believed. They have consciously destroyed it. Through the action of the German state, those parts of the former East German economy that had export capability and which had competitive edge over their West German counterparts, such as the potash industry, have been closed down and now lie idle. The markets of former East German companies have been removed. In 1989, East German enterprises still exported, in West German currency terms, 29 billion Deutschmarks of products to Eastern Europe. In 1992, this had been chopped to 7 billion Deutschmarks worth of exports. Meanwhile, West German exports to the East rose from 24.4 billion Deutschmarks to 30.1 billion Deutschmarks. As a result of this decline, Saxony, for example, a formerly highly industrialized region, now employs fewer people per thousand inhabitants in industry than Greece. This takeover of East Germany, which enriched some individual companies through asset stripping, still costs a lot of money. Around 180 billion Deutschmarks is needed annually to subsidize those companies that have, quote, survived, unquote, and also to keep the unemployment and social welfare systems of former East Germany afloat. Cash that is necessary to enable people in the former East Germany to scrape by. Too much to die from, but too little to live on. The resulting social plight is such that the birth rate in the former East Germany has fallen by over two-thirds since 1990. Since 1989, the public debt in Germany has leapt from 930 billion Deutschmarks to over 2,000 billion Deutschmarks as money has been printed and borrowed to prevent complete collapse in the east of the country. For the first time in decades, the rich Federal Republic must borrow money abroad. In 1990, Germany was owed 69.8 billion Deutschmarks from its loans abroad. By 1992, Germany had borrowed 45.6 billion Deutschmarks more than it had lent. Not that German capital does not have any more money, but it needs its resources to maintain its position in the countries of its competitors in the USA, the Pacific region, in Britain, and in France. For Eastern Europe, the cash box is thus empty. And if there is investment in the East, then it takes place only to keep a foothold in the market and overcome protectionist measures in these countries. But then the Searchlight goes on to explain that the policy that Germany is maintaining towards Eastern Europe is not one of a benevolent protector developer nation. On the contrary, German policy towards the former countries, the countries of the former Soviet bloc, has basically been racist and chauvinist. And in this regard, the manipulation of the refugee issue in German political culture is regarded as not only having significance for domestic German affairs, but is viewed by the authors of Reunited Germany, The New Danger, as in many ways helping to shape German public opinion in order to create a consensus towards Eastern Europe favorable to the quasi-imperialist policies that Germany has embarked on, policies which in all probability will be more than quasi-imperialist ere long. Returning to Reunited Germany, The New Danger. But obviously, German capital still wants and needs a dominant position in Eastern Europe. In this context, all the old reactionary and revanchist concepts of a, quote, German Central Europe, unquote, re-emerge. In this context, too, Germany's rulers know that without a German-dominated and secured, quote, empire, unquote, in Central Europe, it will be hard to become the leading power in Europe and withstand the competition of the USA and Japan. Only an economic empire, like the one built by the Nazis, is an insurance in the struggle with the other industrial powers. Because the Bonn state cannot and does not want to buy this preeminence, it attempts to expand with other means, and those measures are not peaceful, but more aggressive and more warlike than before. The question is not how Bonn tries to secure its domination by economic policies in Eastern Europe, but how it extends its political influence. We can draw a parallel with the so-called German Asylum Compromise of 1993, which did not in the first instance concern refugees and asylum seekers, but was an attempt to install a racist and chauvinist consensus in Germany, and then to use this popular feeling as a basis for interfering in the internal affairs of neighboring East European states. This has worked, as the racist bilateral agreements with Poland and the Czech and Slovak republics to exclude refugees show every day. Likewise, it is political clout rather than investment policy that has shaped Germany's agreements to conduct joint military maneuvers with Poland and with the three Baltic states of Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia. By the way, German political policy towards the former Eastern Europe, the former Soviet bloc nations, and the chauvinist nature of that policy is something that we will be examining in later segments. Continuing with reunited Germany, the new danger. And the same goes for the Trojan horse role of the German minorities in Eastern Europe, which was played once before by the Sudeten Germans and is now being played again, but this time even better. At first, when the East Bloc collapsed, these German minorities misunderstood the new German nationalism and wanted to migrate en masse to Germany. They were soon put right, and since 1992, everything possible has been done to keep the Sudeten Germans, the Silesians, the Russian Germans, and German minorities in other states in their adopted countries as a potential fifth column. Since 1992, there has been, for example, an official German assistance program specially designed for Silesians who are willing to remain in Poland, while financial support for Russian Germans is also being stepped up. The German role in splitting former Czechoslovakia should also be considered because it was deliberately promoted by the Federal Republic in exactly the same way as the recognition of Croatia and Slovenia, which sparked the conflict in ex-Yugoslavia. This strategy of dividing Eastern Europe follows an old Nazi recipe. As Hitler's SS chief Heinrich Himmler put it, quote, "In dealing with the foreign peoples in the East, we must try to accept and foster as many single national groups as possible. That means as well as the Poles and the Jews, the Ukrainians, the White Russians, the Kashubin, and others. And if there are any other small nationalities to be found, these as well," unquote. That is about all we have time for in this segment. We will return to reunited Germany, the new danger, after a break. What I'm going to do now is give you the address, etc., for Archives on Audio, which contains the archival references that you have heard.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is Archives on Audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
That, by the way, is now a 19-page catalog. And again, neither myself nor the station gets money out of this arrangement. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.